Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown. Like a dog without a bone.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Michael Mann, the director of the Earth System Science Center at Penn State University. He's a co-founder and contributor to the award-winning science website realclimate.org. And in 2007, he shared the Nobel Peace Prize with others on the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. His books include Dire Predictions, Understanding Global Warming, and The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars. Dispatches from the Front Lines. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Mann.
Hi, it's good to be with you.
And let's explain the hockey stick, because I'm sure people are wondering about the title of your book, The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars, Dispatches from the Front Lines. The hockey stick is a chart that you came up with along with others on the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and it shows it goes back a thousand years. So you have the long, flat stick part of it, a thousand years, and then just in the 20th century, it suddenly turns upward with global warming.
Yeah, well, it was the first attempt more than a decade ago to try to piece together the information from indirect information from archives, natural archives, like tree rings and corals and ice cores, to extend the temperature record farther back in time, because we only have about a century of widespread thermometer measurements. And what this reconstruction yielded was a long-term trend that showed relatively warm conditions about 1,000 years ago, cooling in subsequent centuries as we head into the Little Ice Age of the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries. And you can think of that, if you like, as the handle of a hockey stick. It sort of resembles that. And then there's the abrupt warming of the past century, which exceeds any level of warmth that's seen in the record as far back as it goes. And so this was one early attempt to extend the temperature record that yielded the conclusion that the recent warming really is unprecedented as far back as we can go, more than 1,000 years. And now there are many other similar efforts that have been done to extend the record back in time, and they've all yielded basically that same answer, that the recent warming really does look unprecedented as far back as we can go, about 1,000 years.
But as real as the evidence that you and 99% of global scientists have come up with, and the very manifestations of these extreme weather events that are happening more frequently and with greater intensity, nevertheless, we have global warming denial. And as I mentioned in the opening, the oil and coal companies have pretty much got the entire Republican Party in their pocket, along with a lot of oil and coal state Democrats. So,
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And my book, The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars, is as much about that as it is about the science. It's also about my personal experience when we published this iconic graph more than a decade ago. It sort of found itself in the crosshairs of efforts to discredit the science of climate change. Our detractors cynically believed that if they could take down this hockey stick and take down, through in essence by discrediting us and our work, they could argue that they had undermined the entire case for accepting the reality of human-caused climate change. Of course, that's hardly true. There are many independent lines of evidence that all tell us that we are warming the planet and changing the climate, and that if we continue to proceed with business as usual, fossil fuel burning and increasing our greenhouse gas emissions, that we will see much larger and more dangerous changes in the future. So we really found ourselves sort of at the center of the larger debate over climate change and what to do about it. And our detractors, rather than engaging in that worthy debate that is to be had about what to do about the problem, have simply tried to avoid even having that debate by pretending the problem doesn't exist.
Well, but isn't that in part due to the uselessness of our press? I mean, in the sense that our press has voluntarily shackled itself with this binary notion of for every argument, there's an equal and opposite argument. This idea that in the universe of discourse, there are only two black and white positions, and that this has enabled, for example, creationists and those that deny evolution to argue that they are just the other side of evolution, and equally true that global warming deniers are given equal billing as the global warming scientists by the press.
Yeah, I think that's right. That the press does in part bear some of the responsibility for this. Of course, there are very good journalists. There are some great science and environmental journalists that are still out there, but there are far fewer of them. One of the problems is that over the past decade, we've seen massive layoffs in the journalism industry of technology and science journalists. CNN, some years ago, fired their entire science and technology team. The Weather Channel got rid of their climate science division. And what's happened is, as these, as we've lost traditional science and environmental journalists, the stories that used to be covered by them, by these journalists who had the training and the background necessary to determine, who's right and who's wrong, they've been replaced in general by, political journalists who are more than likely to treat a problem, a debate over science, of matters of science, as if it's just another political debate where there are two equal sides. And of course, we know that in science, that isn't the case. We don't every time, NASA announces the discovery of a new exoplanet or some other exciting space discovery, we don't have, a representative from the Flat Earth Society there to debate them about it. And yet when it comes to issues like climate science, that is essentially the way many in the media do treat it, as if we should give anti-science an equal stage with science. And it's just not right. But unfortunately, it is one of the, I think it's one of the unfortunate consequences of some of the changes we've seen, the larger scale changes in our media in recent years.
Again, I'm speaking with meteorologist Michael Mann, the director of the Earth System Science Center at Penn State University. He's the co-founder and contributor to the award-winning science website realclimate.org. And in 2007, he shared the Nobel Peace Prize with others on the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. He's the author of The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars, Dispatches from the Front Lines. Well, the reason, though, this is key to our discussion, Michael Mann, is that the president and his challenger, Mitt Romney, have not mentioned climate change. The president did in an interview with MTV. So they're not speaking about it, but it's speaking to us, and you see all these pictures on television. You see the press that we're talking about is devoting all of this coverage, but they're very, very afraid to actually put context in this coverage about what's behind what is happening, and that is to do with this protracted assault, and then going back to the East Anglia hacking, we still to this day don't know who that was behind that Russian server that hacked into those email accounts and created this phony crisis and which the conservatives and the Rupert Murdoch press and others have run with.
Well, that's right, and in fact, it was the Murdoch media empire, along with various news organizations or pseudo news organizations that are actually funded by the Koch brothers and other ideological right-leaning special interests. they did, in fact, manufacture this fake scandal, and not coincidentally, in the lead-up to the Copenhagen summit a couple years ago. And the intention was very obvious. It was to try to muddy the waters, to confuse the public and policymakers, and essentially scuttle any possible progress in dealing with this problem at that critical moment. It was, again, a very deeply cynical assault on science with a very clear intention to do whatever was necessary to prevent us from making the tough decisions that we need to make, moving away from fossil fuel energy, turning towards non-carbon based sources of energy, which aren't destroying the climate and destroying the planet. Unfortunately, there's some very powerful vested interests who don't want to see us undergo that transition, and they fought tooth and nail to discredit the science, to fund front groups, and even so-called experts who are willing to attack the science, to pressure policymakers, to even pressure media organizations to present their anti-scientific views about the problem as if they are on a par with what the scientific community has to say.
So, since you've been engaged in these climate wars for some time, Michael Mann, and your book, The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars, Dispatches from the Front Lines, chronicles them, how much is this current Sandy storm, and it's followed with following Irene, and then Hurricane Katrina, and all of these accumulated losses, along with the tsunami and nuclear meltdown in Japan that cost insurance companies over $40 billion. The figures are becoming staggering. So the assumption is here that the insurance companies at some point or other are going to say, you know, global warming is real because it's going to put us out of business. Do you think their clout is going to give your side some of the kind of heft that it needs, given that the oil companies and the coal companies are pouring money into denial and they've essentially bought the Republican Party, as I mentioned earlier?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think fortunately, you know, there are, you know, other powerful vested interests who stand to lose out big time from climate change. And it, not just the insurance industry, but the ones who really lose out are the ones who insure the insurance industry, the reinsurance industry, Swiss Re, Munich Re, some of these large reinsurance companies that have to pay out very large, losses when you have a natural disaster like, you know, what just took place with Sandy. And for the first time, you know, last year we had, I believe it was a record, 11 different $1 billion or greater cost climate and weather-related disasters. And the reinsurance industry has taken a hard look at the data. They've taken a hard look at the science, and they've said they are losing out because of climate change. Climate change is leading to increased weather and climate-related losses. And so, you know, fortunately, big business isn't necessarily monolithic when it comes to this issue. And in the case of the reinsurance industry, they're a natural ally in making sure that we follow what the science has to say and that we recognize that there are very real costs in not taking action to avoid, you know, potential catastrophe down the line if we don't reduce our greenhouse gas emissions.
So when would you predict, Michael Mann, that we'll have adult conversations that are anchored in reality in our political debates here in the United States? As I mentioned, the leading politicians now running for president have managed to try and sidestep this issue. And of course, you know, maybe in the next few days, Obama, because he's trying to take charge through FEMA of this catastrophe, it seems like an opportunity for him to start to get real. I think most of the public recognize something's going on. You'd have to be living on another planet not to notice that.
Yeah, I think this was a critical event. You know, we don't yet know how critical it was, in the sense that sometimes it takes a little bit of time before we can really assess the fallout of a disaster of this sort. But, you know, it's worth keeping in mind that it was a single catastrophic event. It was the Cuyahoga River fires back in the 1970s the fact that this river caught on fire that awakened the public to the fact that there was a very real threat to ongoing, you know, pollution of our waterways, of our streams and rivers, and allowing, you know, polluters to just dump toxic waste into our waterways. So it was a single galvanizing event that really helped reshape the whole debate over, you know, clean water. And it may be it'll be something like Sandy, and maybe Sandy was it because it had all the hallmarks. You know, we can't say obviously that climate change caused Sandy. What we can say is that Sandy, you know, strengthened, and it took place within an environment that was certainly made more favorable by climate change. The record tidal surge in New York City, where we broke the all-time record that extends nearly two centuries back in time, 13 feet at Battery Park. Well, one of those 13 feet was sea level rise, okay, because sea level has already risen a foot in that part of the world. And so we know that part of that surge had as an underlying aggravating factor global sea level rise. We also know that that storm formed over near record sea surface temperatures off the east coast of the U.S. So it had more energy and it had more water vapor within it, which you take water vapor, you carry it up in the middle of a hurricane and you turn it into rain. And the more water vapor in that storm, the more potential there is for flooding rains. We saw that a year ago with Hurricane Irene, where we had record flooding in New England. And in part, that was related to the fact that that storm formed over warmer waters. It had more moisture and more moisture to turn into flooding rainfall. So, you know, we are seeing the if you like, the loading of the weather dice, which is to say every individual meteorological event has a randomness to it. There's a random component of weather. But what we're seeing is a systematic tendency towards more extreme events of this sort. We're seeing the loading of those weather dice towards more disastrous events.
Well, Michael Mann, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with meteorologist Michael Mann, the director of the Earth System Science Center at Penn State University. He's a co-founder and contributor to the award-winning science website, realclimate.org. And in 2007, he shared the Nobel Peace Prize with others on the Internet Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. His books include Dire Predictions, Understanding Global Warming, and The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars, Dispatches from the Front Lines. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back talking with the author of an article, We Are All From New Orleans Now.
Now we're fighting wars over oil and gas. No matter who wins, it will not last. The earth is scarred, the planet is warming. Don't you think that all of it's a great big warning?
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a